We're doing the book of Shoftim, the book of Judges. We had learned about the great warrior Sisera, who has amassed a tremendous army, and the nations are all fearful of him. And all around him, the nations respect him. And then he had basically taken over Israel. And the Jewish people turned to Devorah, the prophetess. Her husband is Barak ben Avinoam. And we discussed how Devorah merited prophecy because she would get her hands dirty, either she or her husband, making wicks for the temple. And Devorah, we discussed, had sources of wealth all over the country. She had palm trees, she had olive groves, she had many sources of wealth, and she spent her time teaching the Jewish people. Now Devorah tells Barak, you go summon the Jews in the north in Kedesh, Naphtali. You guys remember, we saw the maps last week, right? Up here, we have Naphtali, we have Kedesh, slightly north of the Kinneret. And Sisera will come down towards you from Haroshet Agoyim, and you will be by Mount Tavor. You'll take 10,000 men from the tribe of Naphtali and Zebulun. Their neighbors here, Naphtali and Zebulun. Zebulun is just south of Naphtali. And I will cause Sisera to approach you by the Kishon Valley, and there you will be victorious. And Barak says, if you come with me, I will go, and if not, I won't go. Barak is fully cognizant of the state of the Jewish people. We will learn that the tribe of Benjamin, the tribe of Ephraim, they joined the war. Machir joined the war, but other parts of Israel were ready to flee. The tribe of Reuven was listening closely to see who would win, and then they'd say, I was on your side all along, right? The tribe of Dan was prepared with their ships to set sail, to run away. So he knows that this is not going to be easy to get the Jews to join him to war, and he says, if you come, I'll go, and if you don't come, I won't. And she says, fine, but you should know, you won't get the glory you should have gotten in this war. And so he gathers the people on Mount Tavor. Now Sisera gathers his men. He has 900 chariots. Chariots in those days were like tanks. You guys know how long did it take for Nazi Germany to conquer Poland? 2 weeks. I heard it was one day. It was 2 weeks?
Yeah, I learned in my history class 8 weeks.
When I learned history, I learned one day. But I don't know if it's true.
Time changes, you know, the perception.
Right. Okay, well, it was very short. Bottom line, they had tanks and they had horses. You can't win, right? So Sisera's coming with chariots, 900 chariots. Every chariot could easily take down 10 men. Barak has 10,000 men. Sisera's coming with an army and his 900 men, 900 chariots. And the nations, our wonderful enemies throughout Israel, have joined him free of charge. They say, we will join you. You don't have to pay. We're just coming to kill Jews. It's a good thing to do, right? We hate them, and that's enough. They came out of sheer hatred, as happened often in our history. With the destruction of the first temple, we had the same story. Our neighbors, Ammonites, Moabites, they all joined in free of charge. And they said, we just out of hatred. Yes? Sometimes they had a vetted interest. Sometimes they had what to gain. Here they said, we don't need to gain anything.
The Six-Day War, the independence of the war. I mean, what do they gain really from us not being here?
And the same is true with Ahasuerus. Hakesef natun lach. He tells Haman, keep your money. You can do with the Jews whatever you want. You don't have to pay me the 10,000 coins, right? This happens often in our history. So, Sisera comes. And after the war, Devorah and Barak will sing a song. And from the song, we understand what happened at the war. So in the song, Devorah says, cursed is Meroz. The city of Meroz was right by the Kishon Valley. And the Jews there could have joined and helped us win the war. And they didn't. They sat idly by. You see, another Jew needs your help and you sit idly by. So those are the people of Meroz. And in her song, she will discuss how HaKochavim Mesilotam Nilchamu Im Sisera. The stars from their path came down to fight Sisera. So the simple meaning is, the Medrash says, Hashem says, you took armies for free. People came and joined you for free to fight the Jews. I'll send my army to fight you for free. And so the stars joined the war, and they came down shooting stars. But the commentaries say, don't take it literally. What it means is that later on in the song, Devorah describes Nachal Kishon Girafam. The Kishon waters, the waters of the Kishon Valley, swept away Sisera's men. So what it means is that as they were approaching war, Hashem made the stars, the sun, shine so strong that Sisera's soldiers said, it's hot in this armor. We're taking a quick dunk in the Kishon River before we go to war. And they went into the river, and suddenly a tremendous stream came and washed away the majority of his army. And some want to say in the Dat Mikra Atlas, they want to say that in the Kishon Valley, what we know today, it's a valley that can be completely dry, and then you could have flash floods coming in, and they want to say that's what happened with Sisera's men. But the commentaries, I'm saying the ancient commentaries, I didn't find anyone that says that. I saw modern day archaeologists say that. But the ancient commentaries say they took a dunk in the water, and suddenly the waters became very strong on them and washed them away. And the army was washed away unexpectedly, and that's the idea that the stars fought. So at any rate, they're preparing for war by the Kishon Valley. Yes?
I might be making a mistake, but Gidon is in the story, right?
Nope.
No, Gidon is later on.
This is Barak and Dvorah. Gidon we'll get to.
Gidon has a couple of names.
Yerubal. We'll get there. Yes.
It's interesting that the idea is the stars fight because like the tides and all that are caused by the moon.
Right.
So maybe that's...
I didn't see the commentary say that. I was looking for someone to say that. Yeah. Right. That's, I was thinking that too, yeah.
Also, they don't know totally where the scissor, they haven't found like some of those things over time.
I don't know.
Pretty cool.
So we have a tremendous victory, and the victory seems unnatural. It doesn't seem to make sense, and that's why Devorah is going to sing a song, and that song corresponds to the song of Az Yashir. In the song of Az Yashir, we're singing after the Yamsuf wiped away our enemies. Here the song is after the Kishon waters wiped away our enemies. And in the course of the war, Sisera's army scatters. But Sisera was such a brilliant general that the Talmud says, had Sisera escaped, he could have put together an army all over again and taken over the Jewish people a second time. It was considered a national threat to the point where our sages say that Yael is compared to the matriarchs, because it's as though the matriarchs say, if not for what Yael is about to do, everything they put together would have been destroyed.
And
I don't understand, meaning we have this insight from our sages, but I don't understand in what way Sisera was different than our other oppressors. For whatever reason, our sages revealed to us that with regards to Sisera, the threat was an existential threat. Regrouped, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why Sisera represented an existential threat, but that's what our sages tell us. So Sisera's on the run, and Barak is chasing after the chariots. He doesn't realize that Sisera's gone off the chariots, and he goes to Yael. Now, Yael is a tremendously pious woman. She's married to the family of Cani, and she herself is one of the leaders of the Jewish people. She is described as one of the prophetesses, one of the judges of the Jewish people. So Yael goes out to greet him. And she says, come this way, my master. Come, don't be scared. He comes into her tent, and she covers him with something that we don't know what it is. It shows up only once in all of Tanakh right here, this word. And the word is simicha. So you guys know Ben Yehuda took the word simicha and said it means a blanket. In modern Hebrew, everyone knows what a smicha is. It's a blanket. But in Tanakh, it doesn't show up anywhere else. So our sages have conflicting opinions as to what happened here. One opinion that's presented in Talmud is that she was intimate with him. She knew that she has to get him to be tired, and then she'll be able to kill him. And she knew that it was pikuach nefesh for the Jewish people, so she invited him to be intimate with her, and he was more than once, our sages say. Another opinion says the exact opposite. The other opinion says the word simicha is the letters shemi ko, my name is here. This is the Hashem saying, I'm there, I'm testifying that nothing bad happened between them. And others want to say, what it means is that she didn't have any bad intent, but everyone agrees that she was intimate with him. So at the end of the day, he asks her to drink water. She offers him milk. He doesn't even notice. He gobbles down the drink, the milk, and she gives him thick milk that will get him tired, that will weigh him down. You guys, that's one of the shortcomings of coffee. If you drink coffee with milk, it might taste good, but it has components that will tire you. And if you take coffee without milk, dark coffee, then it has less components that will tire you. Okay, but milk is healthy. Even though the army says milk and coffee is not healthy, I asked the doctor once, do you get calcium?
That just means
you're weak. Huh? You do get calcium from milk and coffee.
It's also not always healthy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh,
right. Yes.
Is there a problem? I guess this question also applies to Esther, that like we have three sins that we're not allowed to break.
Right.
Right. Even for pikuach nefesh.
Right. That's a discussion over there. It's exactly over there that Talmud and Tosas discuss. How could she do this? Right. It's a good question. Right. So you'll have to learn the Talmud on this. Let's see if I can find it right now.
That's family loss. That's family. It's only a family sexual act. No, it's any moral sexual act.
Yes, there was also rape.
If she's not enjoying it, it's rape. Okay, but I mean, here Yael, I don't know Esther's case, but here Yael invites him, you know, apparently.
If she's not enjoying it,
I'm pretty sure it's here. Subos naf gimel amit beis, and yevamos nun tes amit beis. No, I'm sorry. Yevamos kuf gimel amit aleph. That's where the Gemara asks about Yael. Yeah, and the Gemara answers something along the line of what Daniel was saying, that it was rape. But you could look over there. Gemara yevamos kuf gimel. At any rate, back to our story. Happy men tonight. He conks out. He's very tired. He's just at war. He's been intimate with her numerous times. She's given him a lot of milk to drink. She brings this huge keg, you know, filled with milk. So he's drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking. And when he's done, so he falls asleep. And she takes the spoke of the tent and the hammer, and she comes close to him, and then she puts her hand with the spoke on his temple, and then she bashes down with the hammer, and she goes straight through his skull, all the way through the other side of his temple, into the earth. You know, powerful woman. And she ensures he's dead, like bang, bang, bang. Okay, he's dead. And then, after she's ensured he's dead, she goes out and she finds Barak, who's looking, where is Sisera? And she shows him how they've won the war. So now we have the song of Dvorah and Barak.
What do we learn from this?
Like, Sisera's the general.
That's a nice question. Sisera was the general, correct. So the Targum says a line which we don't exactly understand. The Targum says, okay, before we read Targum, how do we understand? Why did she take the hammer and the spoke? We understand she took the hammer and the spoke because in case he'd wake up, it wouldn't be obvious she was trying to kill him, right? It would be like, honey, I was going to ask you, can you help me put the spoke in the tent, right?
I thought it was never
drink,
take milk from a strange woman.
But the Targum says, you see that Yael was so feminine that even when she had to kill Sisera, she didn't use male weapons. She took something that wouldn't be a male weapon. And from there we learn that it's not considered feminine for a woman to walk around with a gun on her holster, right? But they obviously, if women are in circumstances where they need it for security, so they could put a gun in their purse, you know, they. Rabbi Feinstein has a response about that. Okay, bottom line, if it would be beneficial, if it's necessary, a woman can carry weapons, obviously. The discussion in Halacha is then why did the Targum bother saying that, right? He's telling you a general rule that it's not considered something women should be doing, walking around with guns in their holsters. Even though for men, men walking around with their sword and stuff might be part of their daily garb, but for women, it's not considered part of their daily garb.
Are there records of Sisera impregnating Yael?
Sisera impregnating Yael? I'm unaware of that.
Doesn't it say something like Rabbi Akiva?
From Sisera? I'm unaware of that. Could be. I don't know.
The main lesson is look out for women with burning
flesh. Okay. So I don't know that as one of the lessons here. So Dvorah sings a song, and she describes how when the Jewish people were weak in keeping Torah, so then they went down and they were overtaken by the enemies. And in her song, she will repeatedly praise those who kept teaching Torah. One of the challenges is when times get rough, to find someone who's going to teach Torah, even though the times are rough. And their job was to teach Torah, even though it was a dangerous time for them to be teaching Torah. Dvorah calls out and says, Baruch Hu Hashem, praise Hashem, be thankful that He saved us, be thankful for the bad times and the good times. Dvorah begins her song and says, Shimu Melachim, listen kings, you kings who thought you'd help Sisera, so you should realize it wasn't your might that allowed you to overpower Israel. It was the fact that Hashem wanted to punish us, which is the recurring theme in the book of Judges. Yes. If we're under their reign, it's because we deserve it. And she's turning to the Jewish people and saying, learn from this. So she wants the song to become famous. Maybe it'll instill some fear into our enemies. She says, let's review Jewish history. When Hashem came to give us the Torah, He first offered it to the Edomites, and they refused. And there was a tremendous thunder. It sounded like the whole world would be destroyed when Edom said no. And then Hashem came to offer it to the Jewish people, and it was a thunderous occasion. We think of the day of the receiving of the Torah. We don't always conceptualize it this way. What day was it? It was a dark, dreary, thunderous, cloudy day. That's not how we envision it. You know, God's appearing to give the Torah. We think of thunder and lightning. Thunder and lightning with rain and clouds. That's what she describes. It says the heavens were dripping. It was raining. What were the Jews wearing when they went to receive the Torah? This isn't what we think about. When we think about the day of receiving the Torah, we think about sleeping late. We think about other things. But no, she describes it was raining. The heavens were dripping. Everyone was scared. And Hashem is coming to Sinai to give us the Torah. Now we have a responsibility to hold on to it, and that's what ultimately guides us. And when we left the Torah, so we ran into a time where Jews were scared to use the regular routes, Jews were scared to live in open cities. Till I came along, says Dvorah, a mother among Israel. Our sages say she's talking prophecy, but even within prophecy, an element of our personality creeps in. That's why prophets use different terms. That's why prophets use different styles. Well, in this, she made a mistake. She said, till I came along, our sages say, Lo ya'i yehiruta lenashe. The Talmud in Tractate Megillah says, when women are in control, when they become CEOs, so then they will sometimes become arrogant and go out of line. And our sages say that's what happened with Dvorah here. That Dvorah went out of line, and what she said had a taint of arrogance. She said, till I came along, and that's why she lost her prophecy. We don't find Dvorah being prophet after this. Our sages even say the name is not a pleasant name. When you think of a bee, you're not thinking of something pleasant.
Was bee Dvorah before, I mean?
Yeah. Kashel ta'asena ha-Dvorim, it says in Torah. So you see Dvorah.
Arrogant
not fortune, but good will they have for the sham, or some sort of
thing? I don't know. It tells us that when people show arrogance, even slight arrogance, Hashem right away puts them in their place, each one in a different way. When Hillel, who was so modest, became Nasi, so his first speech, he started rebuking the people, saying to them, why do you guys need me up here? Because you never went and learned Torah like I did. And he was trying to encourage them to learn Torah. He was saying, why didn't you? I went and learned by the great leaders, Shemaya and Avtalion. Why did you guys sit around here in Israel and not go learn Torah by them? He meant to be encouraging them to learn Torah. The way he worded it was tainted with arrogance. Our sages say, right away, they asked him a question in the speech and he was stumped. First day on the job, they asked him a question and he didn't know the answer. And he should have known the answer. It says Hashem made him forget. It was an obvious answer afterwards, he realized. But Hashem made him forget because he had said something that was slightly tainted with arrogance.
God's also like
which one is Elisha?
The end of like Shofti.
That what?
That he was like too hard on the people too, and Yeshaya, and that he was too hard on the people.
They got punished over it.
And they get really punished over minute.
Right? I don't know. Hashem decides what's minute and what isn't. What do I know? So back to here. So Dvorah says, when the Jewish people chose new gods, that's when they found war reaching their gates. He had 40,000 Jewish men prepared for war, and none of them had any weapons. She says, you know who my heart goes out to? My heart goes out to the teachers of Israel that even at a time of danger, they kept teaching Torah. People who used to go in business and ride on white donkeys were very scared to ride on their white donkeys because a white donkey sticks out in the desert anywhere you go. So they were scared of the enemy seeing them. People would be scared to draw water because the enemies would have marksmen, and whenever Jews would approach the water to draw water, they'd shoot them. If you approach the water, very often the water brings up gravel, small stones next to the edge of the water, which make noise. As you approach to draw water, it's very difficult to be quiet. So people were scared that the enemy would hear them approaching to draw water. People were scared to get that most basic need of water. And now, says Dvorah, as you go and draw your water peacefully, you should praise Hashem. Look at how life has become more normal for you. You can live in cities without fortification. You don't have to worry about enemies coming in. She says, when Barak went to lead the Jewish people, it is Hashem who went to lead the Jewish people. We are just his messengers. Ephraim, who joined us in the war, well, they've already proven themselves. The first leader of the Jewish people to fight Amalek was Yoshua bin Nun from the tribe of Ephraim. Same as Benjamin. They went with us to war. Well, Benjamin will ultimately, they're the next great leader to fight Amalek is from Benjamin. That's King Saul. The people of Machir, on the eastern side of the Jordan, many of the people did not come. But there was a family called Machir who conquered the area of Gilad over here in the tribe of Manasseh. They came in across the Jordan and they joined us in the war. Dvorah says, what wonderful people. The people of Zevulun, the people of Yisachar. The tribe of Yisachar is also neighbors. Three tribes in the north, right? Naphtali, Zevulun, Yisachar. So Yisachar also joined the war. And even the Torah teachers of Yisachar. What about Reuven? She says, woe to them, the tribe of Reuven. Here you have Reuven. They were far away from the war, and they thought no one would notice. They made believe they didn't know anything was going on. But in fact, they were waiting to see who would win. Why? Why were you waiting to see who would win? What's wrong with you? Gilad, same story. Dan, right? We discussed it. Zvulun waited by the seaside, waiting to see who would win. The ones who charged the war were Naphtali. So at the end of her song, she describes how Yael is the most blessed of women. She took down the enemy. And corresponding to Yael, we have another woman, the mother of Sisera, who's waiting for him and wondering why hasn't he returned yet. And so the women who are with her are telling her, must be that they're getting so much loot, that's why they can't come here. And so she says, she answers them, she says, you're right. Must be there are so many women to rape in Israel, that's why they're delayed in coming. It must be okay. And it's fascinating to see the cruelty of a mother. She should care. And she's saying, no, 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 that's what's keeping my Sisera. And she concludes the song and she says, Hashem, just like you took them down, you should take down all our enemies. The ones who go in the way of Hashem are like the sun, they keep getting stronger. Part of the idea of service of Hashem is continuum. So for 40 years under Dvorah, Barak, Yael, things are calm. And then the Jews again start sinning. And Hashem give us in the hands of the Midianites. Now the Midianites were a nomadic tribe. Who was Midian? Do we know?
What's nomadic?
Oh, they were a tribe that traveled on their camels. They didn't. They lived in tents. Nomadic means
like
travel.
Loaded his daughter?
No, that was the descendant of Abraham.
This week's parsha, at the end of Parshat Chayei Sarah, it says that after Sarah died, Avram remarried a woman named Keturah. Our tradition is that's Hagar. And he had a bunch of children with her. He had Ephah, Va'efer, Va'chanoch, Va'avida, Ve'elda'a. Those are the children of Midian. It says, who did he have? It says he had Midian. One of the children he had with her. Chumash. The end of Parshat Chayei Sarah is Midian. So the Midianites were descendants of Avram. They were nomadic tribes. They were like Arab tribes.
Like North African nomads, more?
Seems that way, yeah. It says, Zimran, Yokshan, Midan, Midian, Yishbak, and Shuach. Okay? So Midian had Ephah, Ve'efer, Vachanoch, Vavidah, Ve'eldah. But Midian was one of the children of Avram. So. Right, so they come from the east. They're coming from the desert, right, east of Israel. And they come in their huge in numbers, as we will see. And every time...
Like India, China...
At this point, it doesn't seem that way. In the Midrash, it says very far east. But here you see the Midianites were close by, as you see in Genesis, in the story of Joseph. So every time we would plant, the Midianites would come, encourage the Amalekites to join them, and they'd swoop down and devour everything we had. And their numbers were tremendous, and we couldn't stand up to them. Here you have this huge tribe just swooping to Israel. So we call out to Hashem, and Hashem sends a prophet, and Hashem says, I took you out of Egypt, I took good care of you, I've been taking good care of you, but I told you, stop worshiping the pagan idols of Israel, and you're not listening. So, what do you want from me? You're not listening to me. So the Jews are suffering. And we reach the story of Gidon. Okay? On the eastern side of the Jordan, there's a place called Aviezer. You'll see it somewhere around here. And Gidon is helping his father hide some wheat from the Midianites. And he uses the olive press to clean, to thresh the wheat. You have to break the wheat so the chaff comes off and you can take the wheat. So usually you can do that in the thresh, right? You have a place where the cattle does that with boards. But they couldn't do that because of the Midianites. So they were doing it in hiding inside the olive press. And an angel appears and tells Gidon, God is with you, brave man. You could lead the Jews to war and be victorious. So he says, that's interesting. God's really with us. Last night was Passover, and my father told me the story, and he told me how God helped the Jewish people save them out of Egypt with a lot of miracles. And now here we are, all stories, but we're suffering, and God isn't with us. And my dad told me that the Jews weren't so pious back in Egypt, so if God helped them, why isn't he helping us? And either because we're better, or just like he helped them, even though they weren't better. So Hashem says, You just made a good argument. With that argument, I will save the Jewish people. And here we learn an important concept. Sometimes it's a question of ingenuity within prayer that opens the heavens. You see that Abraham tried very hard to save someone from the city of Sodom.
Right.
And Lot succeeded with his ingenuity, came up with a new argument. He said, well, the city Tzor has been around a year less than the other cities. They must have sinned less. They've been around 51 years, and the other ones have been around 52 years. So maybe you could let them go. And God says, he's got a point. Fine, we'll let Tzor go. So Avram pleads.
That's the most incredible thing that they can convince by that argument, I think. 51 versus 52, but like really what the difference
is. Rashi says that when Avraham left the table, then God left the table. If Avraham would have kept fighting, that could possibly win. That's one of the
things. I hear.
It's still related to Abraham's argument.
Does this tell us that when we're doing prayer, and we're speaking privately with Hashem, we should be encouraged and try and, within ourselves, dispute and counter argument and kind of like manipulate?
Yes. I don't know about manipulate, but to find ingenuity. Our prayer should not just be a repeat, our prayer should have renewal in it. Find new angles to ask for what's important to you. Yes.
Is there an element of convincing here? Is that the point? Do we convince?
We view it that way. It's a little bit deeper than that, but it's presented that way. Yeah. He tells them, with this you will succeed, and he says, could you please do me a favor? Could you give me a sign? So, he says, I'll bring an offering before you. So he says, fine, I'll wait. Gideon brings cattle and he brings matzah and he pours the gravy over it and he makes an offering. And the angel says, place the meat and the matzah, put it on the stone, pour the gravy over it. And then the angel extends his staff and he touches it and a fire shoots up from the stone. Everything's consumed, and the angel disappears. And Gideon realizes, wow, I just saw an angel. I thought that was a prophet. And Hashem tells him, now he gets prophecy. Hashem tells him, peace, don't worry, you're not going to die. And so Gideon erects an altar there, and from Gideon here we learn that one of Hashem's name is peace, because he names the altar Hashem is peace. We say Shalom Aleichem. What we're saying is Hashem, whose name is peace, should be with you. So Hashem tells him, your father has been raising two cows in honor of the idols. So take one of those cows and destroy the altar of Baal. Destroy the wooden idol of Asherah. Cut up the Asherah. Use it as firewood for an altar in honor of Hashem, and sacrifice that cow that's been raised in honor of idols, in honor of Hashem. Now, everything Hashem told him here is against halacha. You're not allowed to bring sacrifice at night. You're not allowed to bring sacrifice from an animal that was dedicated to idol worship. You're not allowed to use the wood that was an idol. You're not allowed to bring a sacrifice outside. They have Shiloh. They have a temple they're supposed to bring the sacrifices to Hashem. Here we have a Horat Shah. Hashem says, on a one-time basis, a prophet, I will sometimes tell him to do something, and he has to do it because he's not saying this mitzvah is no longer relevant. He's saying, on a one-time basis, Hashem told me to do it this way. So Gideon takes 10 servants. This way it'll be public. It'll be done in public. And he does it at night. He's scared of everyone. And the next morning, everyone wakes up, and they see their famous altar for Baal is destroyed, the Asherah has been cut down, the cow they've been saving to sacrifice has been slaughtered, and they say, who did it? And they tell them, Gideon. And so the people gather around his father's house, and they say, give over your son Gideon, we want to kill him, look at what he did to the altar of the Baal. And we'll pick up here, Bezat Hashem, next week.